From Daylight and Media 3 Limited, I'm Kazuki Akiba.
I'm Taro Hori.
And this is a new season of Sayonara Baseball. This is a podcast where you and I find unseen baseball gems by analyzing them alongside different trends, news, and motivation behind many moves around the league today.
Today, we will discuss the preview to the 2020 World Series and what we think is the key to becoming the champion.
And here to talk more about this is Brandon Weiser, a longtime colleague of mine. He's a business intelligence professional who's a Forbes advisor contributor, as well as a man behind the Airline Guy blog. He writes his opinions on news in the airline industry.
Aledmys Diaz will step to the plate. Last hope for the Astros. And on the first pitch in the air, right field, that is playable. Coming in, Margot, and that's it! The Tampa Bay Rays have won the American League pennant! The Rays are going to the World Series!
Welcome back to Sayonara Baseball. I'm Kazuki. During this Sunday night or Monday morning for Brandon right now, and we just finished watching Game 7 of the NLCS with the Braves against the Dodgers. What a series. But first, before we go into all the nitty-gritty, interesting parts of the LCS series and the upcoming World Series prediction, we want to give another tribute to an amazing baseball player and broadcaster.
Been in the bullpen, and he pops it up. Perez back. Morgan going and takes it in foul ground. Here comes Odom!
This all-time record holder for home runs and games played at second base won back-to-back MVP awards, Joe Morgan.
Now, from Wrigley Field, it's the New York Yankees and the Chicago Cubs on the Sunday night game of the week.
With me is my partner, Joe Morgan. And Joe, Sammy Sosa, he's been through the gauntlet of all kinds of controversy and everything else this week, and he's not hitting home runs. What gives with Sammy?
Well, John, the cork bat issue we'll get into later on. But Sammy's problems actually started April 20th when he was hit in the head by Solomon Torres. He has not been swinging the bat well since that time.
Today, to start off, we'll give a moment of tribute to the great Joe Morgan. Joe Morgan passed away this past week. Joe Morgan, to a lot of baseball fans, is a member of the Big Red Machine. Played second baseman for the Cincinnati Reds. But to a generation like myself and Kazuki, Joe Morgan was the face of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN for many, many years, alongside the great John Miller. John Miller today is the main play-by-play for the San Francisco Giants on the radio. This year in particular, the role of the broadcaster meant a lot more to baseball fans. With no chance of getting into the games or going directly into the stands, we were forced to rely on broadcasters. They became our guiding light and our storytellers when it came to all things baseball in real time. To have Joe Morgan pass away is a reminder that how vital a broadcaster and a play-by-play analyst was. Later in life, I found out that a lot of people were not too much fans of Joe Morgan, particularly as I found out from TV guru and producer Mike Schur and his compatriots Alan Yang, wrote a blog called Fire Joe Morgan about how Joe Morgan did not embrace sabermetrics and all advanced baseball analytics when they first started. But there's a great piece with Pablo Torre from ESPN on the ESPN Daily Podcast. You can go look it up, where he interviews Mike Schur for about 3 minutes and talks about how much he revered him as much as he criticized him. I think that's what we all think about when we think about broadcasters today. We revere them for the jobs they do in bringing us baseball, bringing us sports and all types of live events. But we have criticisms for them. And that was not without for the same for Joe Morgan. And this year in particular, we see that broadcast means so much more. I mean, for me personally, I've listened to almost every series on the radio or TV, ESPN Radio, ESPN, Fox, TBS, MLB Network. All their teams have done such amazing jobs. And we use their stats religiously on podcasts like these. And that means that it's time to recap all the great work that they have done and what they have brought us, because Game 7 of the NLCS just wrapped up. Joe Davis called the game. He called the game of the team that he broadcasts normally. He's also a great national broadcaster for Fox. So now we recap both the ALCS and the NLCS, previewing the World Series, which will start on Tuesday night in Arlington, Texas, at Globe Life Field.
Yeah, Park is across the street.
Right, Globe Life Park. I saw it on the TV screen. It's lit up just like it normally was, converted to a soccer/football field now. And Globe Life Field with the roof just a tad open. Beautiful setting. It looked very picturesque.
Very glass heavy too. A lot of glasses.
The Dodgers won game seven there. And back in San Diego, we saw Tampa beat Houston in game seven. We had two game seven. They went the distance. So
who expected that, right? Who expected it?
I think we both predicted maybe six at most, five, six. Both series had lots of streaks. We saw that the both series had three games won by one team or the other, be it the Dodgers won three in a row to win the series. And then in the ALCS, we had Tampa win game 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 went to the way of the Astros. And seven was a very dogged fight for the Rays to come out victorious. So the Rays will travel from San Diego to Arlington to repeat in the World Series, which they did in 2008.
Yes, almost 12 years ago since their first appearance.
Right. And I looked up who was on that team in 2008. Evan Longoria. The final play was made by Achinori Nakamura, was at second base. He made the final out in that game. So it's incredible for that team to come back. You realize some of those players don't even play in the league anymore.
But there's one particular player who was in that 2008 team that could have been going to the World Series in 2020 this year, which is kind of ironic. We'll get into more of that as we recap both series. But first, let's start off with a series that we have more information about just because we weren't watching it. Let's start off with a Rays Astros series. My God, that was what a nightmare, right? As a fan of baseball, we were just rooting for the underdog Rays, whose payroll is essentially Gerrit Cole's annual salary, which is insane as a baseball team, right? Their top 10 starting lineup players are equivalent to Gerrit Cole's annual salary. So that's kind of insane, but we wanted to root for this underdog and they finished the job. They finally beat the Astros.
Yeah, the Rays finally beat the Astros. And if you look at the scores of this series, it looks like a tennis match. Like it really is like a tennis match. 2-1, 4-2, 5-2. That was the Rays. And then they go 3-4, 3-4, 4-7, 4-2. Like it was close. There were some ugly moments on both sides, but for both teams to talk about. Kevin Kiermaier for the Rays is an ugly moment, got hurt, and he goes in game seven. It's like he can't even swing a bat. Lance McCullers, apparently there were reports from multiple broadcasters that Lance McCullers could shout into the dugout when the Dusty Baker was going to take him out. He goes, he can't swing, he can't swing. And that was like, who said, like, how can you imagine that? Like the best defensive player on that team shouting it, getting shouted at the bat, like he can't swing when he goes up to bat. And like, that's something you don't expect. And then the other thing was on the flip side of bad defense, Jose Altuve, people are talking about he had the yips for throwing the ball in
three errors in two games,
critical errors in that series. And then you on the other defensive, go back to the Rays real quick, Hunter Renfroe and Kevin Kiermaier were playing trying to one-up each other on defensive plays.
Margot had a great defensive play.
Manuel Margot had the play where he flips over into like Timbuktu in the alleyway in Petco Park where the vehicles drive in. And that was incredible to watch that. And the Rays fell apart, quote unquote, a little bit in games 4, 5, 6, but not really.
It was a tight game.
Shaky a little bit. I mean, and then in game seven, one of the most efficiently pitched games I think maybe in baseball history, but at least I've ever seen. Like Charlie, like they felt like they could have finished the game with under 100 pitches at one point for the whole pitching staff that was in the game.
Yeah, I could get into more of that stat. Like this one particular pitcher who pitched in game seven had an amazing, he is just the most clutch pitcher you could count on. And you kind of wonder now, hindsight 2020, why didn't any team sign him? Like, why,
Charlie
right?
Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton signed a 2-year deal when he was a free agent with the Rays. And that's incredible because he was, people thought he was past his prime. He was a has-been or whatnot. Comes in and in game 7, he throws 66 pitches, 48 for strikes in 5 2/3. That is efficiency. The team threw 114 pitches in that game. Wow. Charlie Morton, who was injured, we talked about in previous podcasts being like, we're concerned about his injuries. He'll be able to pitch as a full member of the team. Is he going to be able to pitch a couple innings and have to leave? And he came in and pitched an incredible game 7. When they needed it most, he delivered. We count the bullpen normally for that with this team.
Right. The bullpen did not do as well in this series, but Charlie Morton, I mean, we could go into his postseason stats. So he pitched in both him and McCullers, funny enough, fun fact, pitched in game 7 of ALCS in the World Series in 2017, the Astros winning year. You know, win or not, controversy there, but they faced each other off. But Charlie Morton's stat, his record is 4-0 in a winner-take-all games in the last 4 seasons, and he's only allowed 1 earned run in 19 2/3 innings. And that is in the Hall of Fame category right there. He ranks 3rd among starters in ERA from a starter who pitched in those games, and his ERA is 0.46. And guess who those 2 names above him are?
I have no idea, but I would go, if it's his teammates, I think that's crazy.
Yeah, one of them was, his teammates, Justin Verlander, 0 ERA in a winner-take-all games, and Madison Bumgarner, another pitcher, was a 0 ERA in a winner-take-all games.
Multiple World Series champion with the San Francisco Giants.
So he's in a very elite category right there. But another crazy fun fact is usually if a pitcher is that dominant and has such a low pitch count, usually managers would leave them in. So we did have some head scratch moment with Kevin Cash, but I guess they just went to Ray's way, like the Mandalorian, right? That's the way. So they went the way. And this is, despite the dominance, this is the shortest early hooks from a game 7 starter since who had a shout out since John Smoltz, 1991 World Series, who went 7 1/3 innings for that game.
And you're putting a pitcher in the class of Hall of Famers. Like Madison Bumgarner is legitimately potentially a Hall of Famer. Justin Verlander is on his way, sure. But John Smoltz is already there, I'd hope. Or maybe he's on his way.
No, he already got it.
John. So, I mean, we think of that. Talk about a staff back in the day of great pitchers that just could just do great things of Tom Glavine and John Smoltz and Greg Maddux. I'm not sure we can compare them to the likes of Tyler Glasnow, Blake Snell, and Charlie Morton, but like you're putting these pitchers that are not really into these class of pitchers, into these class of pitchers. I pulled up the game logs for Charlie Morton in this series. His ERA on the other game he pitched against Houston was 0.9. I mean, it's crazy to think all these things. Like the man was just straight insane in his outing this time. First of all, he had to go up against in a game 7. He had to go into the game knowing that it's him against with a Rays team that's kind of battered. I mean, what are you going to do against the Astros team that was so ready to just unload on them? It's like you got Carlos Correa. I'm going to hit home runs every time. I got like Michael Brantley has been just pounding the ball. And he settled everything down. The Rays got a couple of runs early. And the motions went. Now, we talk about the Rays bullpen a lot as really good. Rays bullpen had some issues in this series. And I would say it's mismanagement. We said some like unexpected occurrences where like you throw in Diego Castillo, he gets lit up like a Christmas tree in that one in game 6. And I was like, what's going on? What's happening? This is not in the script.
Right. And then Nick Anderson as well. he just couldn't close any games. Like game five, giving up the game-winning home run to Correa. And then game seven also gave up two runs. So his the key bullpen guy's ERA, if you look at their stats. So Anderson had an 8.31 ERA that's coming to the series, who had a sub one ERA this whole regular season. So that shows kind of a fatigue. And on top of that, you're talking about McClanahan with a 16.2. And Fleming and Glasnow pitching a 6 ERA. That is very high. And on top of that, the opponent's batting average compared to the Astros were very high. It was in the 260 category. We're talking about Glasnow being shelled. The starters like Glasnow being shelled at 348. Snell, 281. Anderson, 389. Castillo, 333. McClanahan, 556. The rest are in the 250 zone. That's not really a great stat to have. So that kind of shows also there were a lot of positive in the Rays team, which were the defense.
That's right. Now let's go back a quick correction on Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton pitched game two, which was a 4-2 win for the Rays. Game
seven. Oh, yes. Like, yeah.
4-2 win. Now let's look at these two games, because I think it's really interesting to look at these two games differently. He went five innings in game two. Take the under on, take the guess at how many pitches he threw in the five inning game that he threw in game two.
65, 70?
96.
Oh, yikes. He threw a lot.
To go from that to what he did is incredible. And then, like you said, the other players behind him stepped up. Not behind him as in like pitchers that came in. You had Mike Brock, you had Kevin Kiermaier, who got his hand smashed on a hit by the pitch. Missed games. What are you going to do? You're going to put all these other players to play defense. But the games that Kevin Kiermaier was in, he plays incredibly solid.
One ball, one strike.
With Hunter Renfro. Like I said, they're going in the air. Like I said, before the pod started, they were going tip for tap in terms of like who can make a better play in the outfield. And they made great plays, saved a bunch of runs. And then offensively, welcome to the plate. Welcome to the world, Randy Arozarena.
Yes, Randy Arozarena, the ALCS MVP, or what we know him as Rakes All Night Day Ear. Yes. Randy Arozarena.
Randy Arozarena was in Manuel Margot, like these two players just hit the ball unconsciously, it felt like, multiple times during this series. What a benefit to this team. We did have to rely on Brandon Lau was not happening in this series. And he's usually their best, one of their top power hitters. Did not happen. And like I said, Kevin Kiermaier got hurt. So you lose another consistent hitter. And then you have Randy Arozarena, who has like an OPS plus that's on, like, I would play close to infinite, it feels like, on this series. Manuel Margot hit massive home runs when he needed to. And then we had Mike Zunino, who is strikeout. He would either feast or famine. Former Mariner Mike Zunino. This thing. Ryan Yarborough, Mike Zunino were both former Mariners, I found out. So Mike Zunino, feast or famine, big game seven performance, home run, and then the sac fly. And we'll talk a lot about the role of the pinch hitter in both series. But G-Man Choi got a single, moved up, gets on to third. Mike Zunino, long fly ball to George Springer.
Right. That was a home run swing right there.
Home
what
run
he's good at.
Feels like a home run multiple parks and just trots on home.
So I want to go back to Randy Arozarena's stat line for this series and the postseason of how great this guy is. So we all know he's an ALCS MVP. So the stat line for this series, he hit 321 average, 1.152 OPS with four home runs and six RBIs. On top of that, we do want to look at his postseason stat line. It's insane. He's also joining in the Hall of Fame class of stat line for postseason right there. So he's hitting 21 for 55. So it's a 382 average, 433 BP, 855 slugging, and 1.288 OPS. And that is considered the best offensive stat line since Albert Pujols' 2004 postseason run, where he hit 24 for 58. So 414 average, 493 OBP, 793 slugging, and 1.286 OPS with six home runs and 10 extra base hits. So not only did he do that, he's a rookie who hit 7 home runs, which is a rookie record in postseason history, was 11 extra base hits, and he only needs one more home run to join the record books for most home runs in a postseason, was 8. So that would be Barry Bonds in 2002, Nelson Cruz in 2011, and Carlos Beltran in 2004. And the crazy part about all of this, despite winning ALCS MVP, he's still eligible to be a Rookie of the Year next season.
He's eligible to be Rookie of the Year next season?
Yeah, he did not play enough in the regular season this year, so he's eligible to be a Rookie of the Year next year.
Talk about a coming out party for Randy Arozarena. Another stat that just blows your mind about like the performance of the Rays. According to Sarah Langs at MLB, the Rays are hitting .209 the entire postseason.
Oh, yes.
That's the third lowest team batting average entering the World Series in the wild card era. Above the only teams below them, 2019 Astros and 2016 Indians, both batted .208. Neither of those teams won the World Series. In their favor for their hitting, in the Rays, when they out-homer their opponents, have won nearly every game. So the Rays are like literally a feast or famine team, which is not great when you try to scale that out to this postseason. Yeah, with the Rays win on Saturday night, Game 7, teams are now 30 and overall throughout the entire thing, 30-4 in games when they out-homer their opponent this postseason. So of the entire postseason, out-homering your opponents wins. But the Rays have also batted the worst in this postseason.
Right. There's a 59-point difference between them and the Astros in terms of batting average. I also want to bring up another stat that's kind of blowing our mind. They hit .174 with runners in scoring position, which is the lowest postseason runners in scoring position batting average that moves past Sarge Matthews' 1983 Phillies, who hit .137. Which is nuts. So they just hit a bunch of solo home runs and scored a lot of runs. And on top of that, Rays scored most of their runs, as you guys know, by the long balls, 71.9%. And that's courtesy of course, Randy Arozarena and yours truly, Mike Zunino, which breaks the all-time record of 1971 Pirates' 58.3% to reach the World Series.
And we talked earlier about like the ode to sabermetrics being like the curse or the benefit of a broadcaster. We're just throwing out stats today because it doesn't make any sense. Like
it doesn't. These are low.
It doesn't make sense how a team who performs advanced analytically this poorly is making the World Series. And so we have gone through all this right now. Let's look at the Astros and how they lost. We brought up the Jose Altuve errors. That was costly.
Right. So I was joking that he should be the MVP, the ALCS MVP of this series, because he essentially gave away two games to the Rays with those three errors. So two errors, you know, that led to Manny Margot's three-run home run in the first inning of game two. And in game three, his costly double player turned into a five-run inning in game three. So he did give away two games to the Rays.
And then the other thing that was the Rays' benefit, the Astros' benefit was this team was consistent. Like they had played in the 2019, most of them, except the pitchers. The pitchers was the one difference.
Right. But I actually do have the stat with the core. We're talking about the core players, right? So with the core players, they played 57 games together in a postseason. And while making it to four straight LCS, so that's like a very big record in the record books.
Unbelievable. Because we thought that could win. And we'll talk about how the Dodgers probably used that too to their advantage. But the Astros just didn't go the distance. And we saw them have basically McCullers and Greinke come out and pitch. And then you had to rely on Valdez or Keedy, some combination of that, throw in the crazy bullpen arms that they could throw in there.
Right. Bunch of double A arms, like who right. just made a debut this year.
That's where we could point maybe a soft hole in their structure, because we can't really in their lineup. They played like they could. The pitching in front of them from the Rays. But their bullpen was far less experienced than the Rays bullpen. High pressure situations, the Rays had to deal with that. Astros really didn't. That was a tough moment.
So I guess what we want to say is, despite not liking the Astros, we do want to commend them for fighting really hard in this series. Like, they did very well, despite not having Justin Verlander and Yordan Alvarez. Like, imagine if two of them were in that series, like, they probably could have won.
Absolutely. They really had all the consistent pieces they had from years past. Shout out to Michael Brantley, like the guy who's kind of like the one acquisition that like this team does not like really have, like, what are you doing on this team kind of thing? Like, why do you
346 in this series?
He just torched him when he could. I mean, that was so well needed when you needed it. That was the really big bright spot hitting wise. You know, Altuve, he had his moments.
He had three home runs. Yeah. Right. The offense showed up when they could have, but it just wasn't enough.
I would say Altuve's hitting performance was admired by that. I guess they were calling it the yips. It's like, you don't call it the yips when you do three errors, but he had such a crazy, like, those three errors were so costly and there were crazy circumstances. They were not beneficial to the Astros at all. And then the last hurrah for this Astros team is, could this have been George Springer's last at bat as an Astro? He spent 7 years with the team, 6 full seasons. Is he done?
Right. And they extended most of the core except for George Springer, which I think is a huge mistake, because without George Springer, who's that leadoff guy who could constantly get on base and hit home runs and pop off really quickly? And on top of that, his defense is very stellar.
He was the arguably most consistent player throughout the entire regular season and postseason to get them to this point. And he could potentially leave. A lot of players could potentially leave from this team, it feels like.
Right. I mean, we could list down the whole free agency pool right now. Like, Brantley, Springer, Reddick are free agents. And you're still not getting Justin Verlander back next year. And he's going to be a free agent in 2022. So is this the end of the Astros, like, era? It looks kind of bleak. Besides the fact that they still have Bregman, Correa, Altuve all locked up.
Yeah, I mean, the one issue is that good enough? Is that good enough to carry this team? The lack of Verlander is concerning. The lack of a lot of deep pitching is concerning. I mean, right now your starters with experience are McCullers and Greinke.
Yeah. Well, I think their starting pitching doesn't have much of a hole, because I think Urquidy and Valdez are going to be a great pitcher going forward. Like, the way they performed in these past few series, like, they've been really good. So I think it's just a matter of who they could bring in acquisition, but also their payroll is getting really tight right now too. So we don't even know who's going to actually be able to come. And also there's a huge stigma of joining the Astros because of the scandal. Who wants to actually come in and play for them?
That's true. Well, how much will that hang over this organization? Granted, they bounced a lot of their staff that was involved in the scandal. Brandon Tomlin was involved in the other scandal. He's not there anymore. But Dusty Baker is the manager. Is he going to stay the manager? We think he's going to stay the manager.
Right. I mean, before we talked about his future, right, I think Dusty was a huge factor in this series. Like, he did an amazing job carrying this team to a point where they could go to Game 7. Like, he just bear hugs all his players to get them out of the hump, and they start performing. And he somehow created Carlos Correa as a leader in that ball club.
I will say Dusty Baker makes a team just better by being there as a manager, as a human being. And then to be thrown into the fire with this organization, everyone gets booted, and he's kind of escorted in as, like, be our savior. Freshness is really the savior. I think he did more than he was asked for. I didn't imagine making the playoffs. Granted, with all the issues they had, when Verlander went down, I thought they were done. I thought they were purely done.
I think the whole expanded playoff format really helped them. 29-31 in a regular, year, that wouldn't be a playoff team.
Absolutely not. And then they beat arguably the team that people thought would go pretty far, the Minnesota Twins. They go to play Oakland. We both wanted Oakland to destroy them. Oakland couldn't hit the broadside of a barn against them for a while. Beat Oakland. And then we saw the true, what we thought were the true colors. They got absolutely destroyed in games 1, 2, and 3 against the Rays. They come into game 4 and they muscle it out. 5, 6, even 7.
Yeah, they were close. They were down by 2 and they could have actually caught up, but Rays finally got rid of that cold spell and was able to perform very well. And Fairbanks was able to shut the door with his 100-mile fastball. So, but we do need to point out Dusty's legacy. Despite being a great manager, he did join another record book, unfortunately. You know, poor Dusty. He did win a ring as a player, but as a manager, do you want to hear this? He has 6 consecutive loss in a winner-take-all postseason games with 4 different teams now. Cubs, Reds, Nationals, and now the Astros. That is one fat legacy for him.
Not catch a break. Rough, rough organizations to be a part of. And you lose, and you lose.
He just lost so many games, but we'll see if, Click, the GM of the Astros, will rehire him, or are they going to go after someone with more of a bigger analytical background than Dusty?
I didn't think of that. They're usually pretty heavy on analytics. I know previous administration before they got all nixed and taken out.
Right, but they hired a Click from Tampa. Funny, most of the GMs are from Tampa in this postseason. Right.
Tampa's GM pool is great. Just hire the whole Tampa staff. Just bring them all in the organization. Great. Just bring them all in.
So what's so funny about this series is all the players who were acquired via trade this past offseason contributed so much. So you kind of wonder to rest of the GMs, if the Rays ever call you for a player, make sure to extend those players. Like, make sure the Rays don't get those players. Like, they have a plan.
Oh, yeah. I think about that. That's incredible to think about that, with how the Rays are just kind of like these have kind of like spread their wings everywhere and kind of in their influences with different teams. Because as you wear your Seattle Mariners hat, everyone in the video wearing a San Diego Padres hat. Thank you, San Diego Padres, for supplying half the team that's being set here in front of us from the Tampa Bay Rays. It's just incredible. And then Tampa Bay Rays also have influenced the NLCS too. They just have everywhere.
I mean, it's a crazy piece that you kind of wonder, was all the offense that who carried the Rays, right? If the other teams could have used them. And for sure, the Cardinals, they got fleeced with that trade. Like, the 2 pieces they gave up, Jose Martinez and Randy Rosarena, like, any Randy Rosarena was a throw-in for that trade. And imagine, like, not having him in a crucial series against the Padres in their wildcard series. Like, they didn't have offense. Like, they had no offense from the outfield, and here's Randy Rosarena. He gave him up, and he's raking.
Randy Rosarena was incredible. Manuel Margot, who was just tossed aside from San Diego in the Cronenworth deal.
Right. And Renfro too.
Renfro go across the country. Invaluable help in this series. And then you look at the other side about the quote unquote veterans from Tampa Bay that played quite well. Like, we talk about the veterans from Houston, very veteran Tampa Bay. Joey Wendell, he's going to play the infield and we're going to stick him there. We're okay with that. He's even had his moments, but not. I mean, Kevin Kiermaier, like everyone talked about, he's probably the best defensive outfielder in the league right now.
And he's the de facto leader. Like, this might not show in the stats, but when Kevin Kiermaier was out for game 4, 5, and 6, the Rays couldn't win. But once he came back, the motivation was back up and the Rays were the Rays again. Like, that kind of shows there has to be a personality in that clubhouse to carry a team to win in a series.
Right. Kevin Kiermaier is the de facto leader in that organization. I mean, the Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, Charlie Morton are incredible leaders for the pitching staff as the main starters. From the fielders and the batter's perspective, absolutely, Kevin Kiermaier. the level of just professionalism that he shows when he goes out and plays is wonderful as a teammate. And as in the last season I ever played fantasy baseball, he was one of my top picks because I knew because I could count him to get a couple stolen bases when I needed to and just get on base. I was like, as a manager, as you expect, he's a stolen bases and get on base. You don't get defensive points. I wish we got defensive points, but that's what his MO is. He is the player to just stick it where you need it to in terms of in the outfield. I'll play. I'll fight through the pain and then go up to bat. And he struck out every time he played batted last night.
Well, he's injured. Like, how did he swing with an injury? but his defense is so valuable. I mean, the crazy part about the Rays, though, they played 12 games in 13 days. That's going to be rough. No off days, just one between division series where they won 5 games against the Yankees, and now 7 was the Astros. Very, very rough.
And like we said, the roles of the bench players came in about G-Man Choi. And like how much you involve, like Mike Brasso, like that whole switch in and out kind of thing. Like, what are we gonna see next series? We don't know. And that brings us to the series that wrapped up about an hour and a half ago, real time to where we are right now.
The Dodgers
and the Braves with fireworks in certain games and just long drawn out baseball craziness in other games. Few quick off the top highlights of the series. Mookie Betts needs to like stop it with these defensive plays
in right field. Yeah, been taking away a lot of extra base hits from key contributor Marcell Ozuna, Freddie Freeman. Just a lot of offense power there.
As a joke aside, we know that you and I traded our friend to the LA Dodgers organization this past season when our friend Kim, who played on our softball team in right field, the best defensive player on our softball team, went to work for the Dodgers. And then all of a sudden they get a right fielder that's really good. Like, we'll call that just pure coincidence, but we know great right fielders are in that organization on multiple levels right now. And to have Mookie Betts just show out all his steps. Like, we talked about like the missteps of like previous defensive plays, and then he did all the right things. Kevin Kiermaier and Kevin Hunter Renfro did too for the Rays. But even in tonight's game, he looked at that wall, thought about it, looked at the wall again, thought about it, and just goes up and grabs it. Extra base hit saved. Previous game, the shoelace grab of running with the ball. Like, he literally had the, like, his mitt like inches off the ground and away from his shoe. Like, he thought he was going to kick it. Not even close. His defensive play was incredible. Tonight, we'll talk about the Braves' mishap with the weird double play.
And the fourth inning, yeah.
With Dansby Swanson, Justin Turner, and Austin Riley, and that whole mess. But for Justin Turner and Will Smith to just play that out real quick and just end it, like, we're going to call this like it is. Corey Seager doing amazing things. Like, Corey Seager doing Corey Seager things.
Four home runs in 2 games, yeah.
Kyle Seager. Both great defenders on for their right. That was just amazing. Defensive play of that team was great throughout the entire series.
Even Atlanta, Swanson like had a lot of great like double plays.
Oh, absolutely. Dansby Swanson is a defensive mastermind going back to his Vanderbilt days. I mean, so shout out to him. Shout out to the crazy amount of like players you may have not heard of so much who played excellent in this game.
Poche.
Christian Pache, Austin Riley. We got a guy in the game.
They made all those catches like seamless. Pache, especially like that center field home run grab against Muncy. Like, that was seamless. He made it seem like he didn't get it, and he just slowly reveals that he had the ball.
Right. Christian Pache is destined for hopefully good things in Atlanta and whoever else he plays for. Same with Austin Riley. Austin Riley had critical plays in this game. Another bright spot, much as the Braves didn't win the series, Braves starting pitching was great. It was amazing. I mean, we talk about Max Fried, Ian Anderson did great things, but fun fact, great story, is AJ Minter comes in when he needs to pitch. He has never pitched more than one inning as a Major League Baseball player. Has not started, I believe, I've heard multiple reports say ever, at least not going back to his college days when he had
in game two.
He comes in, Brian Snitker, the manager, says pitch one inning.
And here he strikes out.
We'll pitch two innings. We'll pitch three innings. He faced, of the batters he faced, he struck out seven.
Casually, some batters, casually.
Casually, and he's throwing just straight heat, and he struck out seven. So AJ Minter, bright spot in a down moment for this team.
And then the big one, I think, for me was in game six of Walker Buehler coming in the clutch in two starts this series, 11 innings pitch, 0.82 ERA with 13 strikeouts. And I think the biggest moment of that series was the bases loaded in second inning, no outs. After three singles, what did Walker Buehler do? Like his Louisville day, he struck out two and grounded out one and escaped the jam. Like, that is some clutch pitching.
Absolutely. And we originally had a lot of questions with Dodgers pitching. Even tonight in game seven, when they reports that said that they had told Dustin May he's going to start at 1 p.m., which is questionable. Like, we had thought, like, a lot of things with the Dodgers. Like, you got your 1-2, and then who's going to be 3? Who's going to be 4? Who's going to be 5? Who's going to catch all these games? And it even goes down to who closed out tonight's game. When Urias was like the, we always like questioned what happens when he comes in. He shut it down. Straight up, shut it down. That whole bullpen had bad moments. Blake Treinen had bad moments. Shut it down. Jose Urias came in, shut it down.
And Gratterall came in too. Like, right. The crazy part about that whole Dodger bullpen, whoever came in today, four of them, Gonsolin, Treinen, Gratterall, Kolarik, they all had above 10 ERA this whole series, and they figured out a way to shut it down. I mean, Gonsolin had some rough patch third inning, but other than that, like, they did their thing, especially Treinen.
In tonight's game, Gonsolin, after Gonsolin left, Treinen, Gratterall, and Urias, no hits, two strikeouts, one walk.
Wow.
And they were goaded in a lot of other previous games. Like, they were the problem.
Except for Urias.
There was a solution tonight. Urias, with his ERA of 1.13, is outstanding. Just, when you compare that against every other pitcher who was pitching tonight's game on the Dodgers staff, it was great.
Right, and they were all facing up against the big rookie sensation of Ian Anderson. Before coming into this game, he had three starts, 2-0 record of 0 ERA, 0.89 whip, and 22 strikeouts in 15 and two-thirds inning. And his opponent batting average was 113, Mike. That's ridiculously low coming in, and they found a way to knock him out after the third inning.
He gave up his first runs of the postseason in this game. He only lasted three, only played three innings. He pitched 73 pitches in three innings, which is, as we talk about efficiency, not great. Like, that is not what you want to see. And that's kind of where the hole was. The bats for the Braves kind had their less than ideal moments, I would call it, because they weren't bad. There was less than ideal other than the game where they got slugged out. Both sides. On
right. I mean, the only consistent bat was Freddie Freeman and Ozzie Albies, just two players. Everyone else, they kind of went cold after two games. They just dropped off. Like, we might see a home run here and there, but that's about it.
That's basically it. Dansby Swanson had great moments, but they were moments, and we'd love to see them be more consistent.
Marcel Zuna also moments, yeah, like Zuna against Kershaw.
Didn't show up. We're beating around the bush about one of the best moments in the series. Will Smith, the pitcher, faces Will Smith, the batter, in a case of mistaken identity, double identity, Gemini identity.
Gemini man. Call it?
Gemini identity. And
Fresh Prince, man, facing the Fresh Prince.
The Fresh Prince of, well, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air would be Will Smith, the catcher. And hits a monumental impact three-run home run. Is the Will Smith power the what sends him over the edge? I don't know.
I mean, he was the key in this game too, to the 2-run double. Like, he played small ball. Like, once the Dodgers stopped swinging for their fences and started playing small ball, their mentality changed and the game changed. Like, Will Smith knocking in 2 runs, like, we didn't expect him to, you know, after the Dodgers gave up 2 runs in the first 2 innings, like, we thought, oh man, this might be a very long game for them. And nope, he changed it really quickly.
The small ball reference is a good one, because in small ball, at the end of the previous series, small ball won the series. And small ball won this series, other than the fact that let's give credit where credit's due in Game 7. Kike Hernandez absolutely crushed that home run to tie the game at 3.
And then we want to talk about the elephant in the room who hasn't really done much in hitting, Cody Bellinger. His bat finally woke up and hit that home run against Coldplay Chris Martin.
Coldplay's Chris Martin is also the pitcher here. So we have Will Smith from Prince of Bel-Air, Coldplay Chris Martin. We're going for a lot of pop culture references tonight. There was a lot of good Mike Schier moments. And unfortunately, that Kike Hernandez home run was the first batter faced by AJ Minter as he came in tonight on Game 7. Which is unfortunate, kind of scars a little bit of a bad mark on a otherwise brilliant series for him.
The question now is, since we just started recording, when the game just ended, we want to check who actually won. Okay, we expected that. Corey Seager won the NLCS MVP with 5 home runs and 11 RBIs. What a series for him.
Corey Seager played great. Corey Seager was an incredibly valuable asset to this team. I'm sure we talk about Mookie Betts, his defense, but Corey Seager generated, you say, 5 home runs and 11 RBIs in this series?
Yep. And that's
in 7 games?
Yep, in 7 games. I mean, it's technically the first 6 games because he did nothing in today's game, but the 6 games in that time frame, he's the one who brought all those runs in.
I'm just shocked. I mean, tonight he went 0-for-5, you're right. We've been going on about this for the 3 times. This is my 3rd time on the podcast for those listening. About how they have the Dodgers lineup is just stacked in terms of just experience. Most of these people have been there with them several times in terms of press situations. In terms of their ability, I mean, they are the all-star lineup of all-star team. They're an all-star team with all-star lineups. Corey Seager, Max Muncy, Will Smith, Cody Bellinger, AJ Pollock. And then we talk about a player at the very bottom of the order who was incredibly valuable to this team because you could sub in anyone and just move him around. And that was Chris Taylor. Chris Taylor,
former Mariners,
played wins.
Former Mariner,
Chris Taylor. And for those listening those who have not followed a lot of the Dodgers in the past, Chris Taylor is basically arguably another Mariner reference. He's the Willie Bloomquist of the LA Dodgers. Willie Bloomquist, historically for the Mariners, we put for the Mariners, could play any position except basically pitcher and catcher. He's literally played every position. Chris Taylor is that for the Dodgers right now. He was that for the Mariners when he was on the Mariners, but he's that for the Dodgers.
Yeah, he's the biggest Swiss Army knife you could ask for right now.
Without a doubt. Because what could happen was, if you look at the roster for the Dodgers, we have to put a new batter in. Well, Jock Pearson got off the bench. Kike Hernandez has to go to the bench. Well, Kike Hernandez could play a lot of different positions too. Same with Jock Pearson, play a few different positions. We have to bring in Rios to bat. Okay, so he bats there. Well, he moves that play around. Whoa. Can't sub out Chris Taylor. Okay, where's Chris Taylor? We'll go second to left, second to center, second to right, second to short, second to third. You could do that because you have a Chris Taylor, because you have Kike Hernandez. They may not show up in the batting stats. Kike Hernandez obviously did tonight. He has hit a lot of very important home runs over time. But what matters most is that flexibility gives Dave Roberts just incredible opportunity. He was about a player, so about a player, can move over. And they've had that. Max Muncy has that too for this team. Like, he can flip sides if he needed to. You saw this team play shifts that were just bizarre. You could basically put like Corey Seager on different sides of first and second base and play whatever he needed to do. This team has a level of flexibility that should never go underestimated. And I think the same can be said for the Rays as to why they're here now,
too. Which is kind of funny because you see the man who's actually running the baseball operations, another former Rays, Andrew Freeman. He brought the Rays philosophy into a big market team. And now you have a powerhouse that makes the playoff every single year since 2013.
And I believe Alex Anthopoulos is also, he used to be the LA Dodgers
Blue Jays.
Blue Jays. And maybe now he's at the Dodgers now. So you have these very interesting different dynamics of management philosophies. But also shout out to the pitching coach for the LA Dodgers, Mark Pryor. Former Cubs, great pitcher for the Cubs. This team is just littered with these weird, interesting, flexible facts that we can see. You can see them play out. Now we really watched baseball really intently for the last couple of weeks throughout the season. You don't see that a lot of teams. And one last one on the Braves. The Braves could have won this. Let's be real. The Astros could have won this. The Braves could have won this. If the Braves won this, it would be on the heels of Freddie Freeman. And they just simply didn't.
Right. I think the summary of both series, teams were up 3-0, 3-1, and somehow I managed to get into game 7. I mean, Rays, if they didn't win yesterday's game, they were on the verge of a reverse sweep. Second team to ever get reverse swept in a LCS series since he got it, my Yankees, in 2004. And guess who won that World Series? The Red Sox.
We don't want to go down there.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about that.
Keith, shout out to Keith Folk.
Former A's Moneyball right there.
former A's Moneyball player.
Oh, man.
So, these were the baseball fans kind of series. They went the distance. Shout out to San Diego. Western Supply Company Warehouse got battered around, but
That beautiful ballpark and beautiful weather that somehow turned into a home run park, which we don't really understand how, but it became a home run park.
The Rays had moments of just incredible joy and then downtrodden. They looked like they were getting slammed out of the park. And they managed to hold it together at the very end. The Astros were going to beat them senseless with those just grinded out games, which I didn't really expect the Astros to really do after what they did to the A's. And they smashed a bunch of home runs and wear down those pitchers in the bullpen to a fine powder. And then they used just enough of that energy, just enough in game 7 to win. And the reverse was you saw the LA Dodgers versus the Atlanta Braves. You saw two games that were out of hand, three games that were out of hand. And then the last couple of games were just grind it out.
That just shows games. Experience right there was the Dodgers. They just knew how to play it. Just shout out to all the players who were able to keep it together. Dave Roberts somehow managed a pretty good game the past three wins, the three winning streaks. He did not have to go to Kershaw, thankfully, for game 7. Because I thought he was going to bring out Kershaw, around the 8th or 9th. And I'm like, this is going to be a disaster. Keep the hot hand. Urias was too hot. Just keep him in there. And he did. So great job to him. Coming up after the break, Brandon and I provide the preview to the World Series and who do we think will win it all.
Then Riley coming up. Riley. First pitch. Fly ball. Center field. Bellinger is there. And he's got it. And the Dodgers advance to the World Series for the third time in the...
The Rays get one additional day of rest. They got off today, but now they are now in transit to Globe Life in Arlington for a Tuesday night primetime event where it will be Tampa Bay versus LA in a true coast to coast, true cross country coast battle in the middle of the country, literally about halfway in between where these two teams actually are located.
And what I like Arlington. To say, it's Tampa Bay West versus Tampa Bay East, because it's Tampa Bay philosophy. It's Tampa Bay with money versus Tampa Bay with no money. Like, that's a David and a Goliath situation right there.
Very, very similar ideals. No commonality, really very, very rare commonality across with players. But the organizations are kind of run the same way. They run very similar ways. So we'll see what happens. And now we strike on to the preview of the World Series, a thing that most people were sure we'd get to back in April and May. And now we are discussing a World Series to a team with arguably, like you said, the lowest salary versus one with the highest.
Right. Just to get a piece of metal, right?
Just to get a piece of metal. Both these teams will play upwards of 14 games in a span of just about 2 weeks, let alone the entire month. It's just amazing. And before we get into the details about the team, let's go through the schedule, because this will be the slight differences between this. So both the NLCS finished on Sunday. Well, I'll even mention the dates. They finished on Sunday, October 18th. Monday, the 19th, is a day off for both teams. Game one is the 20th. Game two is the 21st. There is a break on Thursday, the 22nd. There is no game on Thursday, October 22nd. We go back to action on the 23rd, the 24th, and the 25th. Then there is a break again. And then we play game six and game seven. So there are breaks involved in this, even though there is no travel. The breaks that would have been there had there been travel are still there.
So it's back to the traditional World Series format.
Correct. That is important, because it gives these pitchers just a day of rest.
And also that means you could throw pitchers in whenever you want. You don't have to be careful, unlike the other series where like they threw for two straight games. Like, okay, we can't use them for at least a game or two tomorrow.
That's exactly right. We have the opportunity to truly watch a more strategic, more conventional approach to these games. We've also talked about, we know the general sense of the pitchers that you have here. So let's go through some of the rosters and some of the pitching duels. For the Tampa Bay Rays, top three pitchers are very clear. Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, who Tyler Glasnow will probably pitch game one, we suspect. That's a suspicion and a little bit of anticipation. But in general, Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, and Charlie Morton, who have all been two high-pressure situations, Greer and Charlie Morton, Oz most recent with the World Series. On the Dodger side, Clayton Kershaw, Walker Buehler, and we have Dustin May, who pitched when he needed to pitch.
So he's like an opener now, or whatever bullpen arm, right? I guess.
We have Urias, who's going to come in somehow, some way, and factor in somehow, we figured out. Also pitching, shout out to Kenley Jansen, did not blow a game when he thought that would happen. And you could hear, that was tension. That was palpable. He started, but he's the back end closer with Gratterall. And that's kind of where the pitching kind of lies.
Right. We're kind of confused about who's going to be really starting, because if you look at the comp of the team, Urias is technically the Yarbrough for the Rays. Like, they're the bulker of the team. And then who's the fireman? You have Gratterall and Trinan. And then for Tampa, it's Castillo and Nick Anderson. And then your closer, Fairbanks, Jansen. Like, they're a very, very similarly structured team right here.
Wild card in both those for the Rays is Thompson. Thompson came in and did what he needed to do, but Kelce Thompson came in the back then to pitch a game, pitch in the back of the game. But we all know if we want to play, and you'll remember this from structure from seasons past with the Yankees, if you were a Yankee starting pitcher for many seasons, get to the seventh and 7, 8, 9 is scripted. With these teams, you do the same thing. If I'm a starter, get to the 5th or 6th inning, and the 7, 8, 9 is scripted. Fairbanks, Anderson, Castillo, Urias, Gratterall, Jansen, Trinan, Gratterall, Jansen. You can just mix it up as you wish.
Right. It just depends on the situation, but at least for the Dodgers, it's a little more straightforward if they trust Jansen. That's a big if they trust Jansen. And Tampa, Nick Anderson could close, but he's typically the key fireman. So if anything goes wrong, like in they face like the Mookie Betts, Corey Seager, and the Bellinger of the lineup, he's going to come in to face them instead and then have the other guys close the game. Which I think I forgot to put a fun fact. Peter Fairbanks, he closed game 7 of that ALCS. He is the first rookie to do so since 2008 ALCS. And guess who was on that mound for the Tampa Bay Rays? David Price.
I have no idea.
David Price.
David Price. And the other fun fact about Fairbanks was during the regular season, the Tampa Bay Rays had 12 different pitchers record a save. Never was that Pete Fairbanks. Never did it. And in the playoffs, he has recorded, I believe, the most saves for the team.
Right. And then
the flexibility is incredible with that organization.
It's crazy. And then he became the de facto closer for key games. And he closed it just like David Price did, which is kind of ironic because if David Price did play today, he would be facing his original team.
Yeah, David Price opted out this year to focus on his own health, and safety. Right, that's just an amazing strange connection between the two teams. And then we find one. We found one.
I mean, we could compare the lineups too. Like, it's strangely kind of similar, except Dodgers clearly has money, so there's a lot more firepower than the Rays.
Mookie Betts alone is probably the worst. The entire batting, put all the batters on the with Tampa Bay Rays.
I mean, the salary is probably the starting 9 is Mookie Betts' salary.
If you go down one by one, there's no real position that has like a quote unquote advantage to the Rays as like a position by position advantage. However, as we have seen with the Rays, Randy is gonna Randy this series. We hope. Please, Randy or Arozarena, just keep going.
He rakes all night, day and year. We just hope he does that.
Right. That I have seen that rakes all night, day and year. He has just been a joy to watch for how much of a like you said, just a supplemental piece to a key trade.
Right. That Cardinals thought, what a throw in. Like, we don't care about Randy or Arozarena. Throw him in, give us a top prospect of the Rays who had an ERA of 6. Like, what a great trade. What a great trade.
Absolutely. And then Kevin Kiermaier, please get healthy. Whether the outfield, we got Austin Meadows, please be healthy.
Brandon Lau, please start hitting again. Like, right. I feel like you forgot how to hit.
You keep going with the Rays. Go focus on the Rays real quick. Go through their lineup. Hunter Renfro, will he play more games? Will he just come off the bench? We don't know. G-Man Choi, the G-Man Choi, Mike Brasso tag team at first base. How's that going to work?
Or even Yandy Diaz, if he's going to play more. It looks like it's more G-Man because he's been hitting more.
Thomas, how much will he play?
Well, he's probably going to play the most because he's like the key defensive guy. Like, you need his defense. Like, he saved probably 5 of the games against the Astros. Like, his defensive play in that shift really saved that series for them.
That's a good point. The Rays do, when they shift, Adamas becomes way more critical than he really wants to be. And then behind the plate, Mike Zunino, feast or famine, which is, let's be honest here, if there's one position where the Dodgers have a clear better hitter overall, one is catcher. Will Smith is an incredible athlete.
And we haven't even talked about Austin Barnes yet either. Like, he was really good this past series as well. So, like, you have 2 great catchers.
And then as you go around the Dodgers lineup, I think they're all all-stars, right? They should be. Are they? They feel like they're all all-stars. Max Muncy should be an all-star. Corey Seager should be an all-star.
Justin Turner.
Mookie Betts.
Bellinger. Two MVPs in the outfield. And then you have AJ Pollock, bounce back year, former All-Star for the Diamondbacks. Like, and then off the bench, you have Kike, Chris Taylor, essentially like the Tampa Bay Rays player who could play any position.
Right. Chris Taylor is the Tampa Bay Rays if they're buying the one player. Making prediction on this is going to be really hard.
Man, I don't know. Like, I don't really know who to really root for because I like both teams. Like, if I was not a Yankee fan, I would like just like them as a baseball team because of the way they structure their team so well. But I think it's got to be Dodgers here, right? Like, it's got to be Dodgers here after not failing to do so the past 4 years, getting so close. And yet so far, I'm going to say Dodgers in six.
I will support you and say Dodgers in six. I like to say that I want to hold my prediction from last series. I told you if the Braves got out to a start, it's going to be a hard win. And I was right. Braves won games one and two.
Right. But and I think that hard win really helps the mentality of the team, you know, as a unit, because they have to overcome that hurdle to win it. So in that way, I think the Dodgers are more built for that. While Tampa, I feel like they kind of sneakily won all those games. Like, it was a very close game in all of these. And now you have a burnt out bullpen, like, because Kevin Cash loves to go to that bullpen and you could kind of tell they're very fatigued.
Over-reliance on Tampa Bay's bullpen, I think, is what's going to cost them. I think you point that out perfectly. That's what's going to cost them. I think Tampa Bay is going to maybe not hit as well in terms of the deep ball. Like, remember, they scored so many. They scored greater than two-thirds of their runs off home runs. That might not literally fly at Globe Life.
And also, I guess it depends on the managerial chess game, right, between Roberts and Cash. Like, Cash is definitely the more superior manager than Roberts. I'm sorry, Dave Roberts fan. Like, he fails in critical bullpen situation. There's a lot of mismanagement. So that would be the challenge. And then the other challenge is if they could get Mookie Betts going offensively, like, that would change everything.
Betts offense. Mookie Betts offense, actually, Mookie Betts defense.
And we're Cody Bellinger. Like, if we're looking at the two MVPs actually performing their potential, yeah, game over right there.
Short series. Going with six, Dodgers hold the trophy at the end.
But if it goes seven, I'm kind of afraid Dodgers may not win it because Charlie the Goat Morton will destroy them like he did 3 years ago at Dodger Stadium.
There is a literal wild card in all this, is if Charlie Morton and lack of even Blake Snell and Ty Glass, if they can go deep into games, because we saw what happens when a pitcher goes deep into a game against these Dodgers, usually just quite well. And that gives more power to the lineup.
It does. But also, I think scary part of the Dodgers is that after you go through them for one game, and if they didn't do well, they will study you. So by the time they take on the mound for the second start, they will crush you. Like, you saw that was all the other Brave starter, like Max Fried. Like, they studied him and attacked him early. Same was Ian Anderson in this game. Like, they just know when to attack once they see a pitcher.
Braves collapsed on those really high scoring games.
Oh, right. Was it Kyle Wright who gave up like 10, 11 runs in the first inning?
Kyle Wright just... no good, very bad day was 2/3 of an inning, 5 hits, 7 runs, 7 earned, 2 walks, 2 home runs with a 94.5 ERA.
Oh, God. That's got to be like a record. Oh, God.
Shortly followed by Dayton, who pitched 2 innings, gave up 8 hits, 8 runs, 8 all earned, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts, 3 home runs, and then gave a 36 home run. Granted, the rest of the pitchers that came in that game did not allow anything. But when you score 15 runs in 2 2/3 innings, you're going to lose. And who started that game? You want to know who started that game, by the way, game 3?
Urias, right?
Yep. Stat line, 5 innings, 3 hits, 1 run earned, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, give up a single home run. Kenley Jansen came and pitched the 6th in that game.
Right. That kind of shows how crazy that whole postseason has been. Like, My guess is it's the way, I think it's a similar strategy to how Kevin Cash does with his like bullpen arm. I think David Roberts wanted to give Jansen confidence again and let him pitch in a very wide lead in a random inning just to get him like more experience. Same was how Cash did was Curtis too. Like, you know, he got shelled by the Yankees, came in game three and did fine. So it's just confidence booster.
There you have it. They go six. Dodgers take it.
Dodgers take it and finally win a World Series drought. They haven't won in over 30 years since 1988, since that Kirk Gibson home run. So we'll see how that goes. Or if it goes wrong, will Tampa finally win the trophy? This is their second World Series appearance in their lifetime. So
if Tampa wins this trophy, they'll have won the Stanley Cup. The Lightning won the Stanley Cup against Dallas Stars earlier in the fall. They'll win the World Series, and they are the favorites to win the Super Bowl.
Right, it was the Bucks. Wow, Tampa became a powerhouse in sports now.
It's a little much for me, not going to lie, to have Tampa Bay be the epicenter of all things winning in 2020.
Or no, I mean, you could look at LA too. It's like basketball, the Lakers finally won the finals, NBA finals.
That's a good point. Who will become, which team will have their second championship? Tampa will it be both the Lightning and the Rays, or will it be LA with the Dodgers and the Lakers? Then we go to football. We go to all other sports and see like what's going to happen. Who's going to take up the third convincing trophy?
That's it for this episode of Sayonara Baseball. Sayonara Baseball is hosted and produced by me, Kazuki Akiba, and Tara Hori. Guest starring Brandon Beiser from Forza Beiser and the Airline Guy blog. Please check out his LinkedIn profile if you're looking for business intelligence help, as well as any advice on finance and air travel tips. This episode was edited by Kazuki Akiba, with additional research and editing by Maria Tierney. Our theme song is by Kay Margus. Ray Laptop mixed this episode. Sayonara Baseball is a production of Daylight and Media 3 Limited. We'll be back with another episode. If you like this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast as more people will know about this show. Go to daylightinteractive.com to see some exclusive updates and more about our upcoming shows. I'm Kazuki Akiba.
I'm Tara Hori.
And this has been Sayonara Baseball.